State onside. The late man Matthews, great move. What a goal. Beauty, Austin Matthews.
Matthews flipped it up for Marner. Mitch Marner centering. Hyman to the net, scores.
He took fast down and his shot trap is in the corner.
All right, here we go. Episode 37 of Not Another Leafs podcast on the Hockey Podcast Network at Kent Stapon, at BMcCarthy95, at LeafsPod, at HockeyPodNet. And a reminder that this podcast is brought to you by DraftKings. Basketball teams are entering the final month of the regular season as they gear up for the playoffs. And while some teams are locked to make the playoffs, others are still fighting for their opportunity to chase the Larry O'Brien Trophy this summer, a la the Raptors. DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app, is putting you in the center of the action with the chance to turn $1 into $100 in free bets. Turning $1 into $100 is simple. Pick any basketball team to win their next game, and if during that game the team of your choosing hits a three, you bring home $100 in free bets. That's 100-1 odds on the team of your choosing hitting a three. They don't even need to win the game. That's basically a lock. This year's teams have been hitting threes at an unprecedented pace, so get in on all the action on DraftKings Sportsbook before this offer ends. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable, so you can deposit and withdraw your funds at your convenience. What do we want you to do? Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code THPN when you sign up to turn $1 into $100 in free bets if the basketball team of your choosing hits a three. That's promo code THPN to turn $1 into $100 in free bets for a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 years or older in New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in Indiana 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Don't look now, but the Toronto Maple Leafs, Leaf Nation, have the most points in the NHL. That's right, they are in first place with 57, a record of 27-10-3 on the season after beating Montreal last night. And we are happy to be joined by friend of the show and analyst at Maple Leaf Hot Stove, Ian Tulloch, for today's episode at Ian Graphs. Ian, welcome back to the podcast.
Yeah, glad to be back. How are you guys doing today?
Oh, man, doing great after that win. I know BMAC was all horned up last night watching the Leafs knock off the Canadiens.
Okay, so we have to let Ian know first. I missed the last episode that we dropped Monday, Ian. It was a healthy scratch for me. But, Ken, I'm going to call you out because I took a listen to the episode on the ride home. And I don't know how you can remember Bo Horvat's birthday, who recently turned 26, but you forget mine, which was 2 weeks ago. I was a tad offended, Kenny. I won't lie.
I've been known to forget people's birthdays in the past. The funny thing is, I think I wish you like a happy prior to birthday, and we were discussing that it was coming up, and then I just completely disregarded it. So apologies and happy belated. How many years young are you now? Was that your 26th, 27th?
26, Patrick Elias year.
Yeah, that's right, Patrick Elias. Well, congratulations on staying alive over the weekend. And where's your cottage at?
Thunder Beach, north of Barrie. It's beautiful.
Thunder Beach.
It's beautiful today.
Got to enjoy the nice weather while we have the chance. Man, I don't know about you guys, but I've been so impressed by Jack Campbell's play this season. And he just continues to build on the positive momentum from the beginning of the season to now, where he's now setting, you know, Toronto Maple Leafs records for the most wins in a row by a goaltender. Ian, this has been so impressive to watch. And although his goaltending style can be a little bit unorthodox at times, it doesn't seem to matter because he's getting the W's.
Yeah, 10 games into the season, he's at a .944 save percentage. That's pretty ridiculous. I saw someone tweet out the other night, how many games does he need to start before he starts getting a Vezina consideration? And I thought it was a joke at first when I saw it. But yeah, the fact is, when you look at any of the analytics, if you look at the goals saved above expected, he actually leads the NHL right now, if you look at it on a per 60-minute basis, just based on how many games he's played versus how many pucks he's stopping versus what he's expected to stop. It's truly, I don't want to say unprecedented, but it's totally unsustainable what he's doing right now. I think we all realize that he's not going to finish the season with a .944. If he plays league average the rest of the way, I think you're probably happy, even if it dips down into .910, .920 range. the biggest thing is that it's providing stability between the pipes. And we know as well as anyone that goaltending can be voodoo. That if you pay a ton of money for a goaltender, just look at the Montreal Canadiens, you usually don't end up too happy with it. So it's good to have guys like a Jack Campbell who can come in and all of a sudden, wow, now you have someone who can stop pucks for you. Goaltending's so crazy because it's the position that matters the most in terms of dictating the outcome of the game. But it's also the position in sports right now that's the most difficult to predict. So where does that leave you as an organization? How many resources do you actually put into the position? I think guys like Jack Campbell are kind of showing you that, wow, maybe we shouldn't be putting a bunch of money into our number one goalie because sometimes the backup comes in and he has a much better year.
That's fair. But I'd have to say that it's still Anderson's cage. Everyone's acting like Jack Campbell is the second coming of Christ. Like, this is a bachelor party for him right now. You can talk about the record. You can talk about the stellar stats. He's putting up Vezina-like numbers. But guys, let's be honest. This is Anderson's cage. And if you're Anderson waking up today, if anything, the pressure just keeps alleviating off his shoulders. And, you know, when we talk about down the stretch here, it's been great how we can, you know, take the load off Freddie. Game one, I still want Frederick Anderson between the pipes.
I think you might be alone there, man. I don't know. It sounds like it's going to be Jack Campbell's crease moving forward. You look at the way that the players are reacting to him right now. At the end of the day, if he keeps winning games and he keeps making saves, it's going to be hard to take him out of the net. One interesting thing with Campbell is that he's never actually been a full starter at the NHL level before. He's never carried a starter's load. And the nagging injury that he seems to be nursing right now makes me a little bit worried long term, because if you want it to be Jack Campbell's net moving forward, can he play a full starter's load? Can he go through a full playoff series without needing Frederick Anderson to come in and spell him for a game or two? So
recency bias right now, though, man. Like, I mean, it's easy to say that. It's easy. Like, and again, if I'd agreed, we'd just end the podcast here. I mean, this is ultimately Fred's crease. But I'm not gonna sit here and say Jack Campbell is the starter. I'm not giving him the keys to the car. It's a 1A, 1B situation, and number two is Michael Hutchinson. But again, the guy, I believe, has to be Anderson still when he's ready to go.
Yeah, I don't know that it's going to be Anderson's net when he comes back. I think that Campbell's played his way into the starting role. And to be quite honest, I'm getting a little bit concerned now about Anderson's health. I mean, we haven't seen this guy on the ice in what's coming up on 3 weeks. I believe his last start was March 19th. And he hasn't been skating since then. The organization has been pretty quiet about what his injury is and what he's going through. So it's kind of difficult to speculate who's going to get the starting nod. But I think right now, like, you probably have to go with the hot hand. And the hot hand is Campbell. Whether or not that means that they're splitting starts down the stretch, and I don't know what that means for game one in the playoffs. Obviously, that's subject to the coach's decision, and that could still be changed prior to game one of the playoffs. But right now, Campbell's giving the team the best chance to win. And I think that that's the guy that you have to go with between the pipes.
I was ready to come on here and get into some good debates. I didn't expect Jack Campbell versus Frederick Anderson to be one of them. I just assumed that that was one that a lot of people decided was over at this point.
I thought it was over until we BMAC entered
the
chat.
It is not.
Apparently, the Anderson truthers are still out there. I respect
him. He's just on Anderson's team because they both share the same hair color.
Red hair. There it is. Knew that was coming.
Mine's orangish. When I grow my beard out, it's super red. So, I mean, some solidarity there. I respect the idea of backing a large sample size with goaltending because, like you said, it's one of those positions where you could play a bad month and people will forget that you gave them 3 good years of solid performance. The other factor to consider is ever since tweaking his groin about a year and a half ago, his save percentage has been brutal. So is that something where after turning 30, after going through an injury, he's no longer the same goalie he was when he was putting up back-to-back-to-back seasons of .918 save percentage in 60-plus starts? Because that matters. That's obviously a huge body of work of solid performance. But at the same time, if post-injury he's not the same guy, then I think that's a concern, and that's why someone like Jack Campbell coming in and winning all these games really means something.
Well, if BMAC is on Team Frederick Anderson because they have the same hair color, I suppose that would make me on Team Austin Matthews because we're sharing the same hair color and the same dirt stash. Matthews has been on an absolute heater. And, you know, we were talking about before whether the wrist injury is healed or not. I think it looks, you know, right as rain at this point. He scored his 27th goal against Montreal. That's his sixth of his last seven games that he scored, seven goals through that stretch. Hyman also contributing with a goal and an assist. I think it's fair to say that Hyman, Matthews, and Marner are now a top three line in the league. And I say Absolutely. That when you look over the last eight games, they've combined for 28 points between the three players. BMAC, you agree?
I absolutely agree. I think this is really, well, Hyman really is a fixture on that line. I mean, last night.
He's locked in.
Like, towards the end of the game, he's an absolute soldier out there, makes a huge block, and he looked, like, clearly roughed up afterward. I mean, usually he just kind of skates it off, but even in the handshakes, he was like, yeah, I'm good, good win, we'll get 2 points. But, man, you know, we've said this before, a versatile player, able to play up and down the lineup, and even without Nylander last night, that kind of shuffled the deck, Mikheyev back in the top six. But, yes, to answer your question, the Matthews-Marner-Hyman line, that's got to stay consistent for sure.
Yeah, I've been trying to think of where it ranks among the best lines in the NHL because it's obviously up there. When you think of the best lines, I think of the MacKinnon line in Colorado would probably be my number one line right now. That entire team is just, they've been playing a different
wagon.
Sport than everyone else the last month or so. They've been unbelievable. I also think that the Danault, Gallagher, Tatar line gets overlooked in Montreal. I think if you look at their ability to control the game and live in the offensive zone and the quality of chances that they generate versus their opponents when they're on the ice, it's just completely tilted in Montreal's favor. So
it's a sneaky line.
Yeah,
very sneaky line.
People don't realize how effective it is. I know that they don't have the star power of, oh, a Matthews, a Marner, even a Hyman, a guy that everyone knows is good without the puck. That Gallagher-Danault line, it's unbelievable what they've been able to do the last 2 or 3 years. It's really flown under the radar. They face the other team's top players, and they find a way to come out on top. It's part of the reason Montreal actually kind of scares me in a playoff series, because if there's one line in the NHL that I'm worried about the Matthews-Marner line going up against, it's that Danault-Gallagher line when healthy, because they're one of the best defensive lines at shutting the opposition down.
Unfortunately, they lost Gallagher, so now they got to shuffle the deck big time. But
that's a big thing, yeah, with the thumb injury. So I'm not sure if he comes back 100% going into the playoffs. That's a bit of a, yeah, we'll see what happens there.
Yeah. I think he's done. Isn't that broken hand? He's got to be done for the year.
He'll likely be back for the postseason, I would think. It's probably 4 to 6 weeks, I think, is what they're speculating. So the good news, I think, is actually it's better when it's just a clean break, because everybody's bones basically heal the same way. And it's like 4 weeks, 6 weeks, and then you're back in the lineup. It's not like these soft tissue injuries where there's a lot of speculation, which what we were just talking about with Frederick Anderson, it's like nobody really knows. It's kind of you're just at the mercy of your body and how quickly you can heal. With a bone, it's at least it's like, all right, we have a timetable, and he'll be back by this point. Another player last night, like, who actually I think is what surprised me, has been the lack of conversation surrounding this player, and that's TJ Brodie. He gets his first goal of the season for Toronto. This is 40 games into the season, and he's just scoring his first goal. Now, this is a story for me because of the lack of story that it's been in this market. Nobody seems to care that TJ Brodie was not contributing anything offensively to this point in the season because of how good he's been defensively. And I think that's fairly impressive and speaks volumes to the way that he's been able to play the game and really solidify that decor, that nobody really cares that he's not contributing anything offensively.
Yeah, I mean, you don't, when a guy goes how many games without getting a goal, it's just kind of crazy. You go, wait, you played 40 games for the Leafs and this was your first goal? I think you've been playing really well up until now. So
yeah, nobody cares.
Maybe that goes to show that scoring goals maybe isn't that important for defensemen. I get that it's great when a defenseman is blasting them from the point, but when you look at what percentage of those shots actually go in when you're shooting from the blue line, when you're shooting from the boards, those are low percentage shots. Frankly, I never really care.
Tyson Barry.
Yeah, I'd rather a defenseman not take those shots, pass it to your talented forwards who do come in and take those shots. You're talking about TJ Brodie's defensive value, his ability to time those slides perfectly and prevent the pass through the middle of the ice. We see it time and time again, and it shows up in the numbers when you look at the Riley Brodie pairing. When it comes to shot differentials at 5-on-5, They're above water. They're slightly around just over 50%. But if you look at something like expected goals or scoring chances, quality chances from in tight, they're much better. They're one of the better pairings in the NHL in that regard. And I think that speaks to Riley's ability to break down defenses offensively, create some quality opportunities for. But Brody's ability to take away quality opportunities against, I think, is what really makes that. The yin-yang to that pairing seems to work really well. And like you said, he doesn't even need a goal to be effective, because that's not what you're looking for. You're looking for solid defensive play. When Riley jumps up ahead of the play and now you have to defend a two-on-one, make sure you prevent that pass through the middle of the ice. And Brody's been the best on the team in that regard.
So William Nylander doesn't dress last night, and I don't really want to bury the lead, but it seems like Jack Campbell and his play, Austin Matthews continues to roll. That top line continues to roll. Brody getting his first goal. It's pretty easy to gloss over the fact that William Nylander didn't dress for this game based off of COVID protocols. I guess he came into proximity with someone who had a positive test. We'll await more information on that storyline today. Now, I'm looking at the forward line grouping last night without Nylander. I got to be honest, it looked a little bit depleted at the wing position. And I'm sitting here wondering if now for Kyle Dubas, looking at what this lineup can look like, if you end up losing any one of the four players, whether it's Tavares, Matthews, Marner, or Nylander, this forward grouping is substantially, like, takes a substantial step back as far as the depth being able to fulfill those roles. What do you think, BMAC? Do you think that there's a little bit more sense of urgency now for Kyle Dubas seeing what that forward group looks like without one of their top four players in the lineup?
I don't think it's that depleted. I don't think it looked that depleted last night. We were saying before we started recording, Alex Barabanov back in the lineup. I think he is an excellent bottom six, and the Leafs have the luxury of having substantial depth, something they've carried for the last 3 or 4 years up front. I don't think it's a huge worry, but I mean, given the contracts, when one of those four guys are out, yes, it looks bad because you expect them to carry them. I don't think it would really puzzle or phase Keith, given how he can insert guys on the fly quite effectively.
I've heard a lot of people bring up the fact that if the Leafs lose one of their defensemen in the top four right now, that it throws everything out of whack. That means you need to bring Zach Bogosian up in the lineup, or you need to move Travis Dermott higher up than you're looking forward to. If the Leafs miss one of their top four forwards, it makes it even worse, because if you see the ripple effect it has,
Yep. Yeah,
you have your Matthews Marner line, but after that, what do you really have? Tavares had to do everything himself, which I think he found is a lot more difficult than when William Nylander is doing some of the puck carrying for you. It helps having Alex Galchenyuk there, who's been excellent. I'm sure we're going to talk about him at some point. He's been, I can't believe how well Galchenyuk's been playing without the puck. We know what he can do with the puck, but just the fact that he's putting an effort on the forecheck and the backcheck is, that's something I did not expect. I get that they picked him up on waivers and it was kind of a free ad later in the season, but I think that one might really pay dividends in the playoffs. We'll see where he ends up playing down the lineup. But getting back to the forward core, it has a ripple effect, because if you don't have William Nylander now, okay, so where's your scoring punch on the second line? Now your third and fourth lines don't look good either. This is why everyone in Leafs Nation wants them to trade for Taylor Hall, or at least I do. I know he's the one on my list.
Oh, that's the top of your Christmas list right now, Taylor Hall?
Yeah, this is officially a pro-Taylor Hall podcast now, so I'm not sure I've been kind of anti,
but I will hold space for your argument here.
Okay, all right, let me make the case for it. So he's shooting 2% this year. I don't think that's going to last. If you look at goals versus expected goals, he should have about 6 more. John Tavares is in a similar boat this year. They've both been shooting from really good locations, but the pucks aren't going in. So I think if you look at the quality chances he's creating as a scorer, as a passer, that's the bigger one. If you look at his ability to get in the offensive zone and create east-west passes, ones through the middle of the ice, or passes from below the goal line, we know those are high percentage chances. He leads the league in those passes this year from manual tracking. So I think if you play Taylor Hall with talent, he'll produce. You play him in Buffalo, he won't produce. So,
well, to be fair, he was playing with Jack Eichel, and who's also having a down year as well. But you can't tell me that player isn't giving him ample opportunity from the center position to produce points.
Yeah, this guy won the Hart with the Devils, and the Devils aren't exactly a star-studded lineup.
Yeah, right? Yeah, more on them later, because they're in full trade mode.
Full teardown.
No, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I've seen both sides of the argument with Hall. basically, I'd be okay with Toronto trading for him, but I don't know what the value that you're willing to give up to bring him in. Because you know Buffalo is going to be asking for first-round picks, which if it's this year or whatever, like I don't know. I'd have to look at the Leafs draft capital. But it'll probably be end up being a late first-rounder, regardless of what you're giving up, assuming that they're going to be in the near the top both this year and next year.
Wasn't the latest report from about a week or two ago that it might not even take a first, that a second-round pick might get it done for Hall?
I might be okay if you're giving up a second or a third for him, and then it's basically just trying to make the money work. I don't know what you'd have to send the other way. I'm assuming that Buffalo will retain half of the salary already.
That's $8 million you're taking on.
Well, yeah,
I'd
you'd have to have them retain
half
and then you take four.
And then another team would be taking another portion of that salary, yeah. Whether it's a Chicago or another team comes in, you throw them a draft pick.
Yeah, so there's certainly ways to do it. You just have to get a couple other teams to play ball. The Maple Leafs actually did that with Robin Leonard last season.
Yeah.
They had
yeah.
him come in, retained a little bit of his money, and ended up acquiring a pick. So not unheard of, but it'll be interesting to watch. Ian, just give me your thoughts quickly on Galchenyuk. I wasn't planning on bringing him up today because Brendan and I have kind of talked ad nauseum about his contributions on
the
line with
Chucky
Tavares.
Ian. Yeah, we're
big fans of what he's been able to do. It certainly seems like you are as well.
Yeah, so I grade the players on a scale from 1 to 5 every night, and different players I'm looking for different things. You know, you're going to grade a fourth liner different from how you grade Austin Matthews. So you're going to be looking for separate kind of components of a player's game when you're evaluating them. With Alex Galchenyuk, I've known over the last 6-7 years that he's a talented puck carrier. He's a talented player in transition with the puck. So when I see him make a really nice play at the blue line to gain the zone, it's really cool, and I enjoy it, but I know he can do that, so that's not something I'm really looking too hard for. The biggest thing I've been looking for with him is his effort without the puck. When he's going in on a forecheck, is he putting in those extra strides to really win that battle? On the back check, is he getting back in time, or is he the one responsible for odd man rushes against? And so far, he's actually graded out super well defensively, and that's something that if you ask a Montreal Canadiens fan, hey, what was Alex Galchenyuk like in your time? They will not tell you that he was a forechecking expert or a backchecking expert or a defensive specialist. In Toronto, he's been getting in the shooting lanes and blocking shots. He's been winning puck battles in the corner. This isn't what I expected when they signed him. This isn't what I thought he'd be providing. But on top of that skill that he gives you in transition, he's also providing some defensive value. I really like what the Leafs are getting from Galchenyuk. I don't think he's going to last in their top six after they make that trade for a forward. But I do think he's someone that can still contribute even in the bottom half of the lineup, considering what he's done away from the puck.
That'll be interesting to watch from Sheldon Keefe, how he rearranges the line based off of, I think we can all run under the assumption at this point that Dubas is certainly going to add someone that can contribute in the top six. So it'll be interesting to see how he shuffles the deck because, like, Galchenyuk's looked pretty good on the wing with Tavares and Marner, but it remains to be seen if he can contribute in a bottom six role. Part of the reason that we've highlighted that he's been so successful, and Pierre LeBrun brought this up on Overdrive, is that the Leafs basically put him in his natural habitat, which is with other skill players on a top line where he's expected to play in a more offensive-minded role. And although he has been able to contribute as well in other areas of the game, as you've cited, Ian, part of the reason why he was having such difficulty in Pittsburgh and Arizona and Ottawa or wherever the hell else he's playing over the last little while.
Half the league.
Yeah, exactly. We were just actually talking. Brendan McCarthy called him a suitcase right before he came to Toronto as he got shipped out of Ottawa to Carolina. Ultimately,
hey,
didn't end up even taking the flight.
Six teams in the last, 6 years? So
yeah, no, it makes sense. But yeah, he certainly was. And, you know, the list continues to add, or he continues to add to that list, rather. It just remains to be seen if he can contribute consistently in a bottom six role and not playing with those top two players. But I guess we'll just have to wait and see what Kyle Dubas does. One
he
thing I want
good
to
with Jason Ooh, Spezza,
go ahead.
If you don't mind me just quickly jumping
yeah,
in
yeah,
there.
Of course.
He played with Jason Spezza one game, and they looked really good together. So that's something I could see maybe as a sheltered offensive role that you give some more offensive zone starts to. You give him a bit of talent down there. The other option I saw someone bring up the other day is what if you tried out an Engvall-Mikheyev pairing with Alex Galchenyuk. They provide the defense. He provides some of the puck carrying and transition ability. Maybe it doesn't work because maybe you want those to be guys who are going up against the other team's better players and you don't trust Galchenyuk in that situation. But I thought it was an interesting kind of way of balancing the lines between the Engvall-Mikheyev, who are clearly your long, athletic. They're kind of like, I'm thinking in basketball, it's like your OG and your Siakam just defensively just swarming guys with their long limbs. And then they do poke the puck free, you have Alex Galchenyuk there to do some stuff with the puck in open space as kind of the main transporter on the line. It's something they can test out, but you definitely have ways that you can use Galchenyuk, whether it's on that Tavares-Nylander line, you can throw him on a Spezza line. I'd like to see what he could do on that Mikheyev-Engvall pairing, because that's an interesting way to see, ooh, if you can do that, it's another look that you can throw out there in the playoffs.
Really like Kerfoot centering Jumbo Joe and Jason Spezza. That third line has been pretty formidable for the Maple Leafs. I mean, initially you think, okay, Kerfoot, you're centering two known,
dinosaurs,
renowned vets, like, well, prolific careers, whatever.
Yeah.
But I think they've meshed really well. And obviously Kerfoot kind of been the scapegoat of this team in terms of trade bait. But also on Mikheyev, quickly, Ian, this guy can't finish. I mean, some of these games, I mean, last night could have been 4-3, 5-3 because of Mikheyev. Now, he did assist on Matthews' opening marker. Granted, there was a line change and everything, but he set it up. I think you almost have to assume that he should be part of a package deal, no?
So I can understand the frustrations with him not finishing. What's weird is that he was finishing last year, and even though he never had the best shot or the greatest hands, he was producing last year at a pretty solid clip. This year, he's generating the chances, especially on the penalty kill. You can pencil him in for a 2-on-1 every game on the penalty kill. Him and Kerfoot just seem to find a way to do that every time and not score ever. For whatever reason, Mikheyev will generate the 2-on-1.
Yeah. He'll do everything right, but just a routine shot.
And then
and a routine save.
I tweeted out the other night, when it's Mikheyev on the breakaway, I just assume it's not a goal.
Just walk away from your TV.
Scroll through your Twitter timeline, go crack yourself a beer.
I think Nick Alberga was saying on the Leafs postgame show that he's like Mikael Granlund's 2.0. Like, great separation and just cannot finish on
Michael
a breakaway,
Grabner,
no matter what. Michael Grabner, I
was going to say, Mikael Granlund could be
also a suitcase.
Yeah, pardon me, Granlund. If Granlund on the mind, all the trade talk. Yeah, Grabner 2.0.
But here's the thing with Mikheyev. I think you want to keep him around because of the things he provides for you without the puck. I think this team has so many talented offensive players. You know, Matthews, Tavares, Marner, Nylander. How many guys do they have that you trust to hold a lead in the third period? You don't trust Jason Spezza to do that for you. As much as we love Alex Galchenyuk, I don't think you're throwing him over the boards with 5 minutes left when you're holding a one-goal lead in the playoffs. Engvall's a guy that you can do that with. Mikheyev's a guy you can do that with. So even though he's not producing and it's super frustrating when he cuts to the net and he can't seem to get the puck up and get it over the pad when he's trying to tuck it, he still provides that defensive value.
It's mind-numbing,
so frustrating. I get it. I get it, man. I'm grading these games, too. Like, I'm trying to find a way to say, okay, this is the time. This is going to be the 2-on-1 where you break through, and I get to show the clip, and I get to cheer for you. But maybe he's just destined to never score a penalty kill goal, and that's okay because he still provides value in other ways.
Yeah, no, I agree. I've compared him to a runaway train in the past, where he's just got tremendous top-end speed, gets separation, but there's no control there. Once he gets in tight on the net, he's just got the old stone hands. Let's move to around the league. So no surprises here that's the McDavid-Draisaitl show again in Edmonton. I don't know if you guys saw this, but the Oilers beat Ottawa 4-2, and this is what the score sheet looked like for the Oilers. Draisaitl from McDavid, Draisaitl from McDavid, McDavid from Draisaitl, Draisaitl from McDavid. If the Oilers were playing 3-on-3 consistently, like if they, like, let's say the NHL for some reason was just like, you know, we're just going to do 3-on-3. The Oilers would be the Cup champs, like a lock for the Cup champs for the next like 3 to 5 years. They'd be a dynasty because these two players, like, are just absolutely outstanding and carry the team on a night in, night out basis, BMAC.
They do. I think the play-by-play announcer needs a pitcher of water the amount of times he's just saying McDavid to Draisaitl. It's just routine at this point, man. It really is. They're just taking over the league, and it's crazy to watch. I mean, I'll admit, I don't typically watch Edmonton Oilers games start to finish, but even when you're you know, taking it in for a brief window and not just looking at the highlight pack, man, it's just a whole, it's a whole different experience. Like they just run the team. The offense runs through them. And when they're not going, like, good luck. Because I don't think Kyle Turris is going to find the back of the net.
Not unless Adam Larson takes a slap shot right at him.
Exactly, yeah. So, yeah,
just as a fan of hockey, watching those two is something else. The plays that they can make off the rush.
Yeah,
one player I've really been impressed with is Jesse Puljujärvi this year. I think he's helped kind of solidify their top six. Because in the past, they've been playing Zach Cassian alongside Connor McDavid. And I think it's just such a waste of McDavid's talents to be passing the puck to him. Or McDavid's trying to get the puck and Zach Cassian's flipping it off the glass and out. Now the other team has it. And or you're trying to break the puck in and create something off the rush and Zach Cassian's dumping it in. And now the other team picks it up. Zone exit the other way. And McDavid's thinking, crap, I just get me the puck. Put the puck on my stick and I'll do something with it. Playing with Zach Cassian in the last couple of years, he hasn't had the puck as much. With Jesse Puljujärvi, if you look at his defensive numbers, he's among the leaders in the league at preventing quality chances against. He's winning puck battles. He's skating the puck up the ice with possession. He's obviously playing with a McDavid and or a Draisaitl that tends to help. But I think having a complimentary piece beside him this year finally, that's what we've been waiting for in Edmonton. They don't have enough wingers to actually help out McDavid and Draisaitl. Finally, Jesse Puljujärvi has developed into the player that I think we all saw at the World Juniors back in the day. And I think it's really helping McDavid and Draisaitl look like the players they should be, which is 200-foot monsters. Last year, they were terrible defensively. This year, I think Jesse Puljujärvi's come in and helped them in that regard. And it's made them one of the most dangerous lines in the league, probably the most dangerous.
Fair point. Speaking of a 200-foot monster, Blake Wheeler expected to miss the 5-game road trip for the Winnipeg Jets. Concussion-like symptoms. He basically took an elbow on Monday night against Ottawa. This is really going to hurt the Jets. Aside from the fact that he's their captain, he really is one of the guys that stirs the drink, both on the offensive end and the, with his ability to play the two-way game, BMAC.
Two key players on Canadian teams, both suffering. I mean, we don't know how bad this Wheeler injury is going to be, but
well, it's
Gallagher
a concussion,
out.
Right? It could be. Yeah. We've seen this drag out for months, weeks, right. months before in the past. I mean, you hope all the best, but it's one of those injuries that there's not a specific timetable, and you have to be really careful with it.
Yeah, like when you think Montreal, you think Gallagher, he's the heartbeat of that team, and Blake Wheeler is the heartbeat of the Winnipeg Jets. He's a stud out there and obviously a great captain. So I'm not going to try and guess how long this injury will last, but if it's significant or kind of continues into the playoffs, which it could because it's a head injury, then that's a significant, significant blow to the Winnipeg Jets.
I just need to bring something up. You said that Blake Wheeler is great defensively.
Decent 200-foot player. You don't like
him? I disagree in the last couple of years. I don't know. Him and Mark Scheifele, whenever they're on the ice, they seem to they give up so many chances against, and it happens year after year. So some of it maybe you can blame Paul Maurice and the system because in Winnipeg, weirdly, they've always given up more shots and chances than you would expect, given the talent on their roster. I get that they don't have the defense this year. They haven't had defense the last couple of years. Ever since Tobias Enstrom left, that decor hasn't really been the same. But, man, I don't know. Blake Wheeler, he still puts up points. But if you look at his 200-foot impact in terms of 5-on-5 and the shots and the chances and the expected goals that they give up when he's on the ice, he hasn't been the same player in the last couple of years.
Fair point. Boone Jenner expected to miss the rest of the season for the Columbus Blue Jackets. This is kind of a hit for Jarmo Kekalainen, as Jenner was one of those players that was expected to be shopped at the trade deadline for Columbus. He's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks, likely could miss part of the playoff run. What do you make of Jenner's injury for the Jackets? Basically, their season's over, but certainly this has to hurt them as they can't acquire assets for the future by moving a player who is rumored to be on the market.
Yeah, it's obviously not great for them. This is going to make Nick Foligno their main piece, I'd imagine, at the trade deadline. He's someone that I actually kind of like for the Leafs. If they're not going to acquire my man Taylor Hall, the guy that you guys yeah. hate and me, the analytics nerd, loves. So if let's say Taylor Hall gets traded to Colorado or Boston or insert team, now the Leafs are looking, okay, who's next on our list? It's obviously not Kyle Palmieri because, as we're going to discuss later, he did get moved. So who's next on your list? Well, we're starting to run out of names here because I'm assuming Matthias Ekholm isn't high on your list because he's a defenseman. You're looking for the next good best forward on your list. So to me, it's between Michael Granlund and Nick Foligno. And you'd be getting different things from both players. Michael Granlund, better passer, better playmaker, a bit more versatility in that you can play him in your top six with your skilled players, and you can play him on a third line to center that third line to give you some an actual good center there instead of Alex Kerfoot.
Yeah, fair.
What Nick Foligno would provide you with is something that they're missing right now. It's those elements that everyone and their mother is looking for when they watch this Leafs team. They go, oh, they need a bit more grit. They need a bit more, you know, push in front of the net. They need a bit more push in the corners. And as you know, I get frustrated when I hear the Brian Burkes of the world always emphasizing, oh, you got to add grit, you got to add toughness, you got to add pugnacity, and then you're bringing in Colt Norris, and it doesn't help you win. But Nick Foligno, if you look at his impact on scoring chances and preventing quality chances against, he's actually one of those gritty players who has a positive impact on the game. He's one of those guys that analytics nerds love and the true diehard traditional fans love. So yeah, if you're not going to get my man Taylor Hall, I think Nick Foligno is second on my wish list for the Leafs.
Kind of a big playoff guy. He gives me the playoff guy feels. Just
drove
does what,
Toronto
he knows
nuts
what,
last
yeah,
year.
He knows what it takes to win in the big games. He's obviously a savvy veteran, worn the C. Anytime you can acquire somebody who's worn the C for any team, that's going to obviously add leadership value in your locker room.
Do you remember when he was checking Crosby in that one series when he was given the assignment of shadowing him that entire series? And he did such a good job. It reminded me of Nazem Kadri on Connor McDavid that one game.
Oh, yeah. We're just giving him fits in overtime. Didn't Kadri score the OT winner in that one as well? I believe.
Yeah, there was controversy. Was it interference? Was it a penalty? But it's hockey. You let it go.
Yeah, especially in 3-on-3, I feel like they let stuff go a lot of the time. We brought up Palmieri before. Basically, he was one of the top trade pieces. He's been moved. Him and Zajac get moved from the Devils. Devils get a couple draft picks in return, a couple prospects. We all knew that Lou Lamoriello was going to pull the trigger, particularly when Anders Lee went down and basically left him with a boatload of cap space because of the LTIR. So no surprise that Palmieri and Zajac both get moved to the Islanders. And also no surprise that Kyle Palmieri had to shave his beard upon arrival to a team that's governed by Lou Lamoriello.
Absolutely mandatory. And I guess I'll throw in my tweet of the day here because the Islanders Twitter confirming game day update, Palmieri and Zajac will play tonight against the Flyers. I'd assume they'd have to. I mean, I know it's close. I guess they're coming from Newark, but I thought they wouldn't play till, I don't know, the weekend or next week, but they're inserted right away.
That's about as close as you can get as far as the trade is concerned.
That's
from like the Coliseum on the islands to like Newark, New Jersey. It's basically just like a quick trip across the bridge and there you are.
But man, I mean, the Islanders, like, they're coming back with a vengeance. They obviously have Barzal, Nelson, Pageot down the middle. You add Zajac in there somewhere, and then Kyle Palmieri is bona fide top six. I mean, they're going to look
another
scary
big
good
playoff guy.
And especially, guys, in a brutal, brutal bloodbath in the Mass Mutual East, you got to load up against teams like Boston and Washington. So the Islanders are for real.
Yeah, they're one of the most structured teams in the NHL, probably the best structured defensively in their own end. You look at their ability to take away the middle of the ice. If they get their defense set, if you don't capitalize on a rush chance against them, you're dead. You're not going to score on them on the cycle. You're going to need a really good bounce. You're going to need to get the puck luck that night because the system that Barry Trotz has put in there and everyone's buying into it. Their top pairing of Pelech and Pulock has been unbelievable this year. We're talking about underrated forward lines. They're probably the most underrated defensive pairing in the NHL. They deserve some legitimate Norris consideration for what they're doing at 5-on-5 right now. So you add some talented forwards to this group and Kyle Palmieri, who can get you some goals. Travis Zajac, I think, is way past his prime, but maybe he's someone whose defensive prowess can help you, particularly in a Barry Trotz system. I was wondering if they were going to be one of the teams that would be in on Taylor Hall, because I thought they might have needed another puck transporter other than Matt Barzal. But throwing in a top six goal scorer and throwing in someone who has some defensive value, that certainly never hurts. And Barry Trotz has shown that you throw anyone into that system, he'll find a way to make it work and get the team positive results. So
I'm never going to throw Pelech and Pulock into the Norris conversation. I think they kind of bury their defense and are heavy up front. But, I mean, they're solid.
Production for your liking, I guess. I know they're
solid on the back end, but let's not pump their tires too much.
I think maybe I'm getting a bit carried away saying Norris consideration because they're not in the same tier as, let's say, I'm trying to think who's high on the list this year. Adam Fox, Kel McCarr, Victor Hedman.
Yeah, Hedman.
If anything, Pollock's had a bit of a down year compared to last year. He was much better, but
I don't know. I think he's been awesome this year. I think you look at the shots, the chances when he's on the ice at 5-on-5, they're living in the offensive zone. And when they're in the defensive zone, when they're defending against the cycle, they don't give up anything in the middle. It's all shots from the outside. It's pretty impressive.
This is why we brought Ian on for New York Islanders defense debates, Winnipeg forward debates. This is the episode of Not Another Leafs.
Getting in the weeds here. I've got tons of Sam Girard content if you're interested. But that's
next week,
man.
Next. No, what's the Habs podcast called on our network? I can't even recall. Anyways, we'll just wrap this up quickly. I don't want to get too far into this as we touch on Monday. I basically just want to update the story before we go to the bar. The number is 21. For the amount of Canucks players who have tested positive for COVID-19, including four members of the staff. I'm just going to leave this there because I think everybody's got COVID, serious COVID fatigue. I basically just wanted to update the story for the listeners, and we can move on to the library bar. You got me sitting at a bar on the inside, waiting for my ride on the outside. She stole my heart in the trailer park, so I jacked the keys to her fucking car. Crash that piece of shit, then stepped guess it away. Was romance is misery, so much for memories, and now I'm headed to the penitentiary. See me on TV, the next cop series. I am a danger. I guess I should have did something about my anger, but I never learned real things. All right, Ian, I think we've had you on in the past, and so you know the rules. I got pick somebody who's at the bar and drinking. Al's brother kind of went off the book on Monday for who he chose. Yeah, he was, and who did he end up choosing? He chose Joe Rogan. Just because he's I would like to grab a drink with Joe Rogan. Can't really argue with that. But let's start with BMAC. Who you got at the bar this week?
I'm going to go with Akil Baddoo, outfielder for the Detroit Tigers. And, man, he's had quite the start. First MLB at bat, hits a dinger. Second game, hits a grand slam. Third game, walk-off single. Yesterday, first career RBI triple. He's been an absolute stud. He's going to come back down to earth, but man, the Tigers, which can be kind of boring to watch sometimes. I don't know how big of a baseball fan you guys both are, but the Tigers got a gem in Akil Baddoo, and this is just the beginning for the kid.
I'm going to go with Jesperi Kokkaniemi. He actually ended up getting bumped up off of the fourth line due to the injury from Brendan Gallagher. But basically, with the addition of Eric Staal, this bumped him from top tier, player who some Habs analysts said he was going to be more valuable to Montreal than Austin Matthews was to the Leafs. Ha! That's what I say to that. But he's basically fighting for his life right now and fighting to be a relevant center on Montreal. I know he's young. I know he needs time to develop. But this is a wake-up call for Kokkaniemi getting bumped down to the fourth line and something that could be if he can't realize his talent. I'm going to go to my tweet of the day here. It's from our friend of the show, Ross Levitan, at Ross Levitan. Habs fans will look at you with a straight face and defend taking Jesperi Kokkaniemi over Brady Tkachuk in the 2018 draft. Just another reason you simply can't trust them. I was tweeting this out from the Leafs pod account last night, that I am so happy that Mark Bergevin passed on Brady Tkachuk, because although the Leafs still have to see him in a Sens uniform, I would hate it so much more if that guy was buzzing around with the Montreal C on his chest, just causing all sorts of crap up. Oh. Yeah, it would have been a total disaster. So hashtag thank you, Mark Bergevin, for passing on Brady Tkachuk.
Also passed on Quinn Hughes. Could you imagine him playing with Shea Weber? What that pairing would
goodness.
Look like?
It would be unbelievable. Yeah, that's true.
If that skill sets.
Because basically the problem with Hughes is it's been well touted this year that he's a liability defensively, and they basically got rid of his partner Chris Tanev. He goes and signs with the Flames, and then all of a sudden he looks lost out there, still putting up tremendous offensive numbers. But if he had a solid defenseman partner such as Shea Weber, oh, it would be take the leash off that kid and just let him go.
Match made in heaven, right?
Send
it's
it.
The yin and the yang. It's exactly what you're looking for. All right. I am taking a Joe to the bar. I am going to be taking Joe Thornton to the bar. I'm going to be buying him many beers so that he's forced to take a couple nights off because he deserves it. He's 41 years old.
He certainly does.
He needs a night off. Give the man a night off. Let him spend some time with his family. I know we're in COVID. I know that he's a $700,000 player, and because he's in the lineup, they get to accrue extra cap space until April 12th. And I know that Brandon Pridham knows this because otherwise – I'd imagine that Joe Thornton would have been rested at some point over the last month or so. It's kind of clear that he's going through the motions a bit in the middle of the season here. So I'm going to take him out to the library bar, even though I think bars are closed right now. We'll take him out to a patio bar, maybe after bars open up.
Load
management.
And get
Joe Thornton a bunch
of
drinks.
Give him the Kawhi Leonard treatment.
Get him a corned beef sandwich, too, while you're at it.
I love Jumbo Joe. Big fan of what he did earlier in the year. I want him to be successful on this team, which is why I think he could use some rest.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think that probably is the plan for Kyle Dubas and company down the stretch. Just plug some of the younger guys into the lineup. Give him, even if it's, you know, one game on, one game off, give him a couple of games in the press box. Whatever you need to do to get him rested before the postseason. Because it's pretty clear at this point, Toronto looks like they're going to be cruising into first place in the division. Not that there's a huge advantage anyway, since there likely won't be any fans in the stands by the time the playoffs start, especially in Canada. So there's really no benefit in even trying to burn out some of these older vet players down the stretch to acquire better positioning. Gentlemen, you got anything going on for the rest of the day? What are you thinking?
Well, I was going to ask you guys quickly, in honor of Masters weekend, your appetizer, entree, dessert for your first meal when you arrive. Quickly, off the top of your head. Ian.
See, I've been golfing with my dad. At least that's the one thing we did in quarantine last year, that we got to spend a bit more time together. So that's the one thing I'll remember about 2020, is that even though it was the worst year ever, I got to work on my golf game a bit, and I still suck. So when I compare myself to some of these guys at the Masters, I go, man, this is brutal. Well, so what was the question? What's my meal?
What do you think for a snack?
My,
yeah, the snack food. And
appetizer, entree, dessert for your first meal. You just arrived at Augusta.
I need, they got to sell beer there, right? I feel like I would need to
I'd assume,
get the juices.
Yeah, you can have whatever beers you want. You can have Budweiser's, Coors Light. Keep in mind that usually somebody, like whoever wins the Masters, has to pick up the tab. I think that's who decides what the appetizers or whatever are going to be. I'm going to go with like a little like Cajun shrimp skewer as the appetizer.
Ooh,
yeah,
nice.
I like that. Like a little fresh lemon juice on top. That's a nice, fairly light. We're going to go with the bacon-wrapped filet mignon with a side of Brussels sprouts and mashed potatoes as the main. Nice light main before you go out to have to play a round of golf the next day. For the dessert, I'm going to go with a double chocolate cake with a scoop of vanilla ice cream.
Money.
Yeah, got to keep it simple, you know?
I'm going to go with bacon-wrapped scallops to start things off.
You got to have something
with the
bacon
shrimp sauce.
There.
Yeah, the shrimp sauce, too. That's money. Damn. A little prime rib, Yorkshire pudding, and some mashed potatoes with the gravy, like, in the middle. So it's a little
prime
like,
rib,
whole.
I like that, yeah.
And then for dessert, maybe, like, red... I don't usually eat dessert. I'm not just saying that because like, we're recording. I don't usually eat dessert. I used to also be, like, over 250 pounds, so I've tried to cut that back. But I treat myself because I'm at Augusta, so it'd probably be red velvet cake because that stuff's bomb.
Yeah, gotta sneak one in while you're in Augusta.
I'm thinking, have you ever asked someone, hey, what would your last meal be? You know, you're on death row.
That's basically what we're asking
you
right
now. I'm thinking, okay, all yeah. right, so is it blueberry pancakes? We're going with bacon and eggs? Are we thinking steak?
No, that's not your last meal. That's not your last meal. That's the meal that you get when you end up at a diner at 2:30 in the morning after getting absolutely
in one. And that's all they have left.
Yeah, you get two blueberry pancakes with the side of bacon and two sunny side up eggs. You put them on top of the pancakes and then pour syrup on the whole thing.
Sometimes I have a smoothie with it. That's one of my suggestions.
Wash it down.
It works for me. So it doesn't work for some people. I don't know. But let's see. What would my meal be? I'm at Augusta. I'm feeling a steak sandwich. I could go for a steak sandwich.
Caramelized onions in there, maybe?
Oh, that does sound good.
Instead of helping out a friend, you just want to be at the ACC, going for the prime rib sandwich.
Instead of regular fries, we are gonna go with those nice, tasty sweet potato fries.
Nice,
my favorite. Yeah, got to get some of that chipotle mayo to dip them in, And
yeah, you need the Chipotle mayo with the sweet potato fries, certainly.
And I need a beer, whatever they've got on tap. I'm not too picky when it comes to beer.
And you're scratching dessert?
Normally I'm a healthy scratch for dessert, but again, like you said, we're in Augusta, so give me your whatever triple fudge brownie you've got, some chocolate sauce on top. That sounds good to me.
That's what I'm saying. Love Load it. Up the chocolate. I'm more Love of an appetizer it. Guy myself. Savory first.
Yeah.
Sweet doesn't need to be there.
No.
I'd much rather just have a cleansing ale at the
or
end
just
of my
straight
meal.
Up appetizers. Like I can just roll with appetizers all night.
Oh yeah. Just,
like,
big time.
All night appetizers, yeah. Get a few pints going. Sounds like a good time.
Yeah. Hey, listen, we'll fire that up once we're allowed to again. Once we get the all clear, three of us will definitely meet up for a pint at the library bar. We've been talking about it for a long time, but it seems like this can keeps getting kicked down the road.
Might have to wait till after the Leafs win a cup at this point. Jeez.
Oh, and hopefully that'll be in, July, August.
I was going to say, how many months away is that? Yeah, plan the parade. It's coming soon.
Not too far away. I don't even know when the playoffs start at this point. It's like June, isn't it?
It's just in flux.
The one year the Leafs win the cup will be when we can't have a parade for it. That's just the way that life's going to work.
Yeah.
Yeah. We can have a boat parade on Lake Ontario.
Yeah, Matthews will be like Brady, just wasted. Jack Campbell will be carrying him home.
We'll all be 6 feet apart from each other wearing masks. There's no way that would actually work.
Yeah, you'll have to take the parade all the way up to Pickering. All the way up to Pickering, if that's the case, it'll be a bigger disaster than the Raptors parade. Hey, Ian, thanks for taking the time today and joining us at Ian Graffs on Twitter. Let the listeners know where they can find your work at the moment.
Yeah. So like you said, at Ian Graff on Twitter. I've been putting out the post-game Leafs report cards at Maple Leaf Hot Stove. If you're looking for it, you can just follow me on Twitter. I usually put out the link there. You can Google Ian Tulloch report cards. I'm sure it'll show up. I try to grade every player on a scale from 1 to 5. I do it after every Leafs game. I've been doing it for the last couple of years. Why? Because I'm a masochist. Because I'm a Leafs fan who's been watching this team for a long time.
Because you like staying up till 4 a.m. when they're on the West Coast.
I love trying to find notes on a third or fourth line player that I didn't really notice who played about 10 minutes. It's my favorite thing to do in life. So it's what I've been doing for the last couple of years.
Okay, I want a breakdown story next time we talk on Alex Barabanov. Like,
oh my,
a full story on the kid.
How much
like
time
part
did he
ready? Pulling back when he played. It's just, I'm trying to make notes. I'm like, what did he do? I'm like, I think he touched the puck once.
I think he had a shift.
He looked okay in that 8 minutes, 29 seconds of ice time.
For Barabanov, I put in, he picked up an assist, and I don't think he completed a pass in the offensive zone.
Yeah, that's right. He did get an assist on the Brody goal.
And he didn't even complete the pass. It was a broken play. So there you go.
Thanks for listening to episode 37 of Not Another Leafs Podcast on the Hockey Podcast Network. Throw us a follow on Twitter at Kent Stapon, at BMcCarthy95, at LeafsPod, at HockeyPodNet. And we'll catch you next time.